Hello and welcome to the Ship Shape Podcast, a series of podcasts where we meet amazing people and talk about their experiences, personal, technical, and all related to the maritime world. Come and dive in, dive in.
Today on the Ship Shape Podcast, we have Lena Gothberg, host and producer of the Shipping Podcast. At over 200 episodes, she knows her ship. Your two co-hosts today are Meryl Charette on a live aboard on a Ta Shing Toshiba 36 in Boston, Massachusetts, and T.
Hey guys, welcome to the Ship Shape Podcast. This is Talha Bhatti, and we have a really interesting guest on with us today, because Lena's going to give us some really cool insights on a career in podcasting. Yeah, and people are saying it's going to blow up anyway, become a billion-dollar industry. So we're going to ask her how to stay alive and, you know, thrive, hopefully, in that industry. And then she's our first actual, you know, shipping person. So we're going to deep dive into that and find out what makes that tick. And welcome to the show, Lena.
Thank you. Hello. I'm the guest. My name is Lena Gothberg. And I'm based in Gothenburg. It's not Miss Gothenburg, but my name is Miss Gothberg. I live in Gothenburg in Sweden, on the west coast of Sweden, which is where the biggest port in Scandinavia is, the port of Gothenburg. It's small compared to a lot of other places, but thank you for having me as a guest. This is new to me.
Thank you. So maybe let's start there. How does it feel to be on the other side? You're usually asking all the questions.
I feel a little bit nervous. I can admit that.
A brand new feeling.
Yeah, and I feel important. Now I understand why it's so easy to get all the hotshot people on my podcast, because I offer them a platform and a place to speak up.
Now, before we get into the podcast and how you've already done over 200 episodes, you've been around since 2015. How exactly did you get introduced to marine? Did you grow up boating or in marine? How'd that happen?
No, I stepped on that famous banana leaf. I just slipped into this. I studied law. And then when I finished my studies, I started working for an insurance company. And someone I knew was recruiting people to become marine insurance brokers. In Sweden, we were not allowed to have marine insurance brokers before we entered into the EU. Before that, we were an agent for one insurance company, but the broker is more like buying the insurances on behalf of the clients. So he had a lot of clients, but he didn't really have anything in order behind the scenes. And he saw me as the administrative wizard to come in and sort it out. So I did that. So I was working as a marine insurance broker, and I didn't know anything about marine. So the first thing he did was to make me and the lady who was accompanying me into the company, she was going to work with the financial side of things. He put us on a boat, on a ship to Germany.
Yeah. Mm, and this is the first time ever? What?
Yeah, in my job. Yeah, of course, we can always go by ferry here. We only have one bridge to Europe. So usually it's a lot of ro-ro vessels, roll on, roll off, or passenger ships. But in my job, that was my first trip, yeah. So that took two days. Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
First time I saw a captain. First time I saw a chief engineer. But we had so much fun. Yeah, but joke aside, I also... Yeah, it was a lot of insuring with Lloyd's in London. So I worked a lot with them at that time. Our company were owned by Norwegians at that time, then bought by British people, and then bought by American people. So I've been working with a lot of different cultures. I mean, if you have a ship, it's worth so much. So no one takes the entire... It's not like you can call your insurance company and insure your ship, your car or something like that, because that is not a big amount. But if you have a big ship, you need to have more than one insurance house or insurance company to insure you. You can say, I can take a risk for $30 million. Yeah, I take the next one. That is also $30 million. You need someone to keep it together. And that was me at that time.
I see.
So I had a lot to do with Star Cruises at that time.
What's a Star Cruiser?
Star Cruises. They were buying passenger ships from the Baltic Sea between Sweden and Denmark, called Viking at that time, and then put them in Singapore or Kuala Lumpur and rebuilt them to become casino ships.
Oh, yeah.
And they brought a lot of people from Sweden and Finland and Åland, which is a small island, with them because they knew everything about the ships. And the people who bought them, they didn't know anything about shipping. They knew everything about real estate, casinos, and hotels. So they needed to have some help with that. So then I worked a lot with the Far East.
Did you get to travel, though?
Yeah.
How much traveling?
Yeah. I also used to work and insure a lot of the Stena vessels. Stena is a big ship owner in my city. It's a lot of tankers, passenger ships, ro-ro vessels, oil and drilling, all of that. And this was back in the 90s. So it was like when there was a war in the Persian Gulf. So there were a lot of war risk premium that was, you couldn't believe it how much it cost us. So you have to have earned a lot by trading with the oil into the Persian Gulf or going in to get it out in order to be able to pay all this premium because it was horrendous at that time.
Wow.
So I learned a lot about ships and maritime and all of that by just sitting behind my desk and traveling to see the clients.
And then at what point did the podcast become a thing?
Oh, should I skip 15 years in between?
Yeah, no, don't skip. Don't skip.
So what happens 15 anyway? Years in 15 minutes.
No, yeah. Five. So after having been a broker, you know, buying insurance on behalf of the clients, then I became a seller on the other side. So I became a hull underwriter. So I was insuring ships in Sweden in part of a Nordic management team. The owner were Danish and I was working with Norwegian and Finns. So I know a lot about different cultures. Everyone thinks that Scandinavia is one country. No, we are not. So then I insured a lot of, from the smallest boat, working boat, to the big passenger ships. And then I quit that job. And then I was asked to take care of something called Institute of Shipping Analysis. Sounds very fancy. And it was all about business plans and what you have to put into a business plan to know where you're going. So macroeconomics, shipyards, where were all the ships built? When will they be delivered? Trade, and so on. At that time, that was an association, and they asked me if I could turn it around and get more members and more income. And I said, fine, I can do that. But they didn't give me any budget for marketing, which is rather stupid, but a bit typical for this industry. You're not supposed to spend any money on the soft values. Soft values, that is marketing, communication, HR, and insurance. And I've done them all, so I know. So I decided, okay, they will not give me a budget for marketing. So I started hanging out with people who love online communication. So there were a lot of young people with vloggers and bloggers and programmers and all of those guys.
This is inside the company?
No.
Yeah?
Outside.
Yeah.
No. Where? I went outside to find people because the board was not as young to know anything about social media or things like that, I tell you. So I listened to someone talking about podcasting and I said, wow, that's cool. That's like radio, more or less. Is there a podcast about shipping? And they said, No, there is no one. And I came back to the same place a year later and I said, no, still no podcast about shipping. And they said to me, you better shut up or start your own podcast. So I did. I went home, decided that my podcast was going to be shipping podcast, and I bought the domain.
Nice. And what year is this?
2015.
Early.
During the summer 2015.
Yeah, yeah. So, OG status, right?
Yeah. Right. So I signed up for an online course. And this was before everyone knew was Teams or Zoom or anything like that. So I signed up for a course in the US. And I had no idea what I was signing up to. But it was a course called Podcasting School for Women. And just by chance, I got to know and become friends with the two best and most knowledgeable women in podcasting in the entire USA. So that was just by my lucky charm. but they were a little bit confused because every other pupil or every other student on that course were from Canada or the US. And then there was this blonde woman from Scandinavia, and they didn't really know. And do you use PayPal? Can you use PayPal? We can't get any money into it. So I signed up, and I was spending every Monday evening during the summer with them. And I learned how to do this from start, the craft, how to do it, how to start, what to think about, and what not to do, and all of that. And
nice.
Those ladies still have their podcast, so they are She Podcasts, and that is Elsie Escobar, from she works with Libsyn, and Jessica Kupferman. And those two are, wow. They started a Facebook group. I think they have more than 20,000 female podcasts in that one now. They are the best. Wow.
And that's only going to keep growing. Mm. You know, people are just embracing podcasts.
Mm. Yeah, so that is how it started. And then people in my industry try to snatch my name, Shipping Podcasts, but they couldn't because I owned the domain. And I decided to build a website. It's still there. Unfortunately, I haven't had time to remake it, but I knew that the people in the maritime industry, the shipping industry, had no idea about podcasting because there was no podcast. No one knew about it. So I had to build a website for the least interested but most wanted to listen. That is the CEOs in my industry. So there is a very big play button. And when they asked me, how can I listen to myself? I said, go to your computer, write shippingpodcast.com, sit still and press play and it will be there. And they were, wow. And the first 2 years, the first 2 years I spent just walking around getting all people's mobile in my hand to show them what the app looked like and how they could listen from their mobile. For 2 years I did. I have had more than 100 mobiles in my hand because they had no idea.
Yeah, you were now, educating people.
It's so much more mainstream now. Yeah.
Big companies. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
And so how were you received on some of the first few episodes that you put out?
They were like, okay. She's probably onto something, but we don't really understand. And as everyone says, the first 10 episodes, you hate them once you get the hang of it because the sound quality is not as good and you don't really know how to do it. But the first episode I didn't even own any equipment. I just borrowed that from someone. And I made my way onto one of the largest container ships that was calling the port of Gothenburg. They couldn't stop me. And that captain was so nice. So he showed me around this. He was on the Virgin tour with this container ship from Singapore, straight somewhere around there, Singapore, I think. And he came to Gothenburg all the way. And he put up a tweet when he was leaving Singapore Straits saying, en route to Europe. And I replied to his tweet saying, are you on your way to Gothenburg by chance? And he said, yeah. So I said, I will be on the quayside to say hello when you come here. And then
you show up with a recording device. Yeah.
I had to be there. Yeah, it was hard to get in, but I did it. But how was it received? Yeah, it was like, I think people know that I'm not just playing around. I deliver when I put my mind to something. So they knew that there would be something, but I didn't understand it. After a while, people started saying to me, we understand now. You saw the void. There was no other one doing podcasting. And you saw it and you did it. So I think I've got recognition afterwards anyhow.
And so then, so in the beginning, was it just more CEOs and like, so you didn't, did you actually get into, because there's a shipping podcast, how many layers of like the shipping industry did you explore?
Well, when I started it, it was more like, I'm so fed up sort of explaining what I do to everyone outside this little bubble. So that is why I started it. I wanted everyone else to know how exciting it is to be in our industry. So I decided, well, I need to have, I was recommended not to have just one episode released first, but four. Because if people, you know, if they didn't like this one, they could test the other one. So the first one was with the captain on the ship. Then it was the CEO of Stena. and it was female banker specialized in maritime from Norway. And then I interviewed the guy who set up all the social media channels for Maersk, Jonathan. Jonathan Wischmeyer. I met him in Copenhagen and he just wanted to help. So I let those four out. And then I started to think, well, I need to start by picking the low-hanging fruits first. So I asked everyone I knew, hey, you're a ship owner. Don't you want to come on this podcast? I started by the youngest I knew because they were a little bit more like, yeah, that sounds interesting. Mm. And then just, you know, 10 episodes in, or I thought, well, I can probably do something with this platform. I can probably change things. So I set up a goal for myself that I would have 50% female voices and 50% male voices on my podcast. Because you hardly hear or see any women in the maritime industry in the press. Hardly ever. So I wanted to have that goal. But I didn't know if I would make it or not. I didn't really believe in it, but I had that as a goal. And then I realized I know so many women in the maritime industry around the world because I have been a member of Women in Shipping and Trading Association, VISTA. And that is an association for women in maritime in more than 50 countries. And for 2 years, I was their communications officer and supported them. And so I knew so many women in 50 different countries, so I could ask them. It took me 5 years, but I have equally men and women on my podcast now. And I'm proud of that.
Mm, good stuff.
Yeah. But also, I realized also that maybe because it was downloaded in the maritime hubs around the world, I could see that. So maybe it was maritime people eavesdropping on each other because, you know, I interview people on innovation and I'm a technical nerd and I like those things changing the industry. So I realized they are listening to each other. So I had to change the concept a little bit and not just talk to the general public and politicians and young people and so on, but to interview people also to talk about the new stuff going on. So for a while, it was a lot of not self-driving cars, but self-driving ships, autonomous ships and things like that.
Yeah.
And
are we there? Did we make it?
Yeah, there are a few. Yeah.
Nice.
So I started to think, if I do innovation, there is also more women in that part of our industry. Because I could see a lot of young women, 30, 35, coming into the industry and they knew everything about blockchain and all of those digital things because there was not a man standing in their way. They could just, you know, they just entered in there.
Yeah.
And
the internet sort of empowered them that way.
Right? Yeah. And I met them and I asked them, I said, could you maybe do a blockchain course for newcomers, for me? Explain it to me. I don't know anything about it. And then everyone else could learn something as well.
And so have you received kind of, as you were doing this podcast and creating awareness and information about marine and really filling in that gap, did you receive any type of support from the industry itself? Or what's the story with that?
Are you talking sponsors or what are you talking?
sponsors/ people in the industry kind of
how are you funding it though?
You know?
Yeah.
No, it's all of it's me. It's out of my pocket still. When I started, all the people I know in the industry who was close by, they understood that I was gonna do something. So they said to me, send me a bill. So I did that. And then after a while I realized, well, I can't really, you know, market each and every episode because it takes too long. It takes too long and this is still a hobby. And I still need to do some work. So I decided that maybe I should have a platform of more than one company paying a little bit more. And then I could, you know, rest and do other things in between. So I started to analyze who is spending the most money on marketing in our industry, especially on conferences, because I think that maybe podcasts could be an alternative to conferences. Because usually you go to a conference to learn something or to meet people, to mingle. And you don't have to listen to someone if you're mingling. But if you still want to learn something, you can definitely listen to a podcast. And then I realized that the big five conferences in our industry, it's the classification societies that are spending the most money.
When you say, what does that mean? Classification societies?
Like DMV and what do you have in ABS and what do you have in the States? That's ABS, I think. American Bureau.
ABS.
So, yeah, those classification. You need to have your ship classified before you can insure it. So it needs to be, certified more or less. And they want to go to conferences and meet ship owners and buyers and so on. But I realized that the people who went to these conferences and had the budget for that, they had no idea what a podcast was. And they wanted to continue the way they did, travel the world and meet the same people at the next conference.
Becomes a circuit, right?
Yeah, it is.
To meet each other at every port, right?
So then I decided.
So how'd you break that? What'd you do?
Maybe people with satellite communication, I thought, because they are not in our industry yet. So I started by calling a Swedish company called Ericsson. And when I phoned them, they said, "Oh, hello, we love your podcast." And
no
I
way.
Said, "Oh, good." So we were this no close way. In signing a contract because they wanted my podcast on their website. And they wanted to sponsor.
And then Ericsson went out of business.
Yeah.
That was a big company. That was Sony bought them, right? It became Sony Ericsson.
And then
the goals changed.
But I have had ship owners asking me to make commercials for their podcasts in my podcast because they want my audience for nothing. They don't want to pay. And those are the big names around the world. The same for the UN body that we are working for. They wanted me to come and make a podcast with people in their part of the world, but they wanted me to pay for my trip and to do all the editing and so on. So I have said no, thank you, but no thank you. On the other hand, I have people supporting me and people opening doors to me and people introducing me to very interesting guests and so on and bringing me along on different things. But that's not the same as sponsoring with money, I would say.
Yeah, you know, we've certainly experienced the same thing. You know, what I tell people is I had no idea that the podcast was going to kind of open so many doors and let me communicate with so many different people in the industry that now it's like, okay, we know the movers and shakers of the industry. I mean, that was the major value that we've seen thus far.
Yeah, I have one more value, which is that I get so much messages and emails from young people. I love that. So many young people reach out to me and tell me what they think and what they want me to hear and that I have opened their eyes to more than one occupation because there's so much to do in this industry. Also, I get emails from teachers at maritime universities writing to me to say,
"That's cool.
I got a whole class full of people studying to become master mariners. And now they say, why should we become master mariners where there are autonomous ships?" And then I tell them, go and listen to Lena's podcast. And then you will know what you can do. Just final exams. And then you're good to go. And then I feel like, wow. She's using me in her teaching to say, listen to the shipping podcast and you will hear what there is to do.
Well, we're realizing that for sure. Is that like in one level, it's like sort of capturing knowledge almost and just making it accessible to anybody who wants it. Yeah, and now it's really becomes like a personal choice. How is it? Do you like this is how it's going to be? These are all your options. Do you want to take that jump and see a whole other slice of reality? Really, because again, like the first time I was thinking about boats and whatever. Like I remember people did this like 1,000 years ago. I don't know if they still do it, right? And once I got in, it just kept you like, oh, there's a whole other world here.
It's the same with podcast. So, yeah. Do you listen to many podcasts yourself?
I do. I have a couple of favorites. And it's definitely like Meryl and I, and people know it's just like a companion medium, right? So you'll just have it on in the background and you'll be doing your own stuff and you'll be enjoying their stories and learning something, hopefully. But so tell us, so your experience goes back again, 2015, right? So you've seen things change. You're going on 10 years now, just in podcasting. I'll ask you a similar question for shipping. But like in these going on 10 years, what have you already seen changing in terms of the landscape? I bet education is now way easier in terms of people know what a podcast is now. But what else have you seen?
Oh, I've seen, all the free hosting services, which is really not free and not as good as the ones you're paying for. It's always like that. What you pay for is usually a little bit better. I've seen video become more of a thing.
That's true, right? Yeah.
But
yeah.
Personally, I don't think that podcast and video is the same thing, because I listen to podcasts when I do other stuff.
Exactly.
I'm driving or running or shopping for groceries or cleaning my house. I can't stand still watching a video at the same time, but I can listen in my ears. So it's in my ears to my heart and my brain what I listen to. And as you say, I have my favorites. I miss them if I don't listen to them every week. Have I seen more? Like Spotify came into this industry and then they went a little bit out in and out. And
So as we shift our conversation to shipping, you know, I'm getting a feeling that you're very much an optimist. So if we can turn into a realist, how is the shipping industry right now? Are we in a good track? There's a lot of changes, and how I've heard it described is it's like we're at the moment right when, you know, steam became obsolete and turned to diesel. Like that's the general feeling that's happened. Are we actually in course to have these innovations? What are your thoughts?
Yes, we are. But there are still just a few doing that. I mean, there are more than 80,000 ships in the water around the world. And the forerunners are what you said. We are just changing into something else. And I've done two very interesting interviews coming up. The next release and the release after, people just telling me what it's like to be out there, the hotshot people who knows what's happening. And the environmental stuff, it's so real for us. And it's also about the bottom line. I mean, you can't really use this very expensive, very old-fashioned, very black fuel. You have to find something else. You have to. And there are so many different things happening, I think. But one of the problems when it comes to the environmental stuff is that, yeah, it takes 4 years to build a ship. It takes 6 years to build a seafarer. So there is a lack of seafarers. And we're still to see the delivery of those ships that are now ordered with the more green solutions to our challenges. Some of the big ship owners have started and they are well ahead of the other ones. But still, the average ship owner own 10 ships. So maybe you could compare it to having a 10 lorries or something on shore. How can you keep up with the big guys then? So it's slower that they are changing the other ones. On the other hand, all the innovation with people who lives and breeds their ships, that's where it comes from as well. So yeah, I'm very optimistic as well. I'm sorry to be optimistic even on this one. But I mean, we're virgin territory also to the digital world. So there's so many things coming in. I have seen, when I started podcasting, I asked people about digitalization. And they said, yeah, maybe it's not for us like that. And in every episode, I asked the people, what do you think about autonomous ships? And the old ones, my age and older, they said, will never happen. And the young ones said, when can we test it? But then again, I saw the digital move from, okay, well, maybe it's not for us. Then I saw the consultants coming into the industry and they were consulting on digital. And then after a while, the company started buying small startups into their company with, you know, technical knowledge and digital and all of that. But now they have their own departments with people doing that. So it's been a move into the digital world as well, which I have seen.
Interesting. How do you think it's going to change in the next few years?
Well, we still have to see this change that we are talking about. But I think the pandemic was sort of helping us in a way. It was terrible, terrible. We had a crew crisis because the seafarers couldn't get to their ship or couldn't get home or couldn't get vaccinated and all of that. But that made everyone realize that, where is my order? Where are my orders from, you know, Amazon and all things like that? Or where is the toilet paper everyone is looking for? And what are we lacking? Why isn't it here? Yeah, because the seafarers couldn't deliver it, but they did deliver. Oh, my God. They worked through everything.
Well, There was so much talk about supply chain this, supply chain that. Like, what's the situation with that? How's that looking, again, in the next few years?
Well, it's picking up. But on the other hand, we have had China closed for a long while. You know, they had a zero tolerance for pandemic. And that was hard for people, you know, importing things from China or getting things into China. China is importing a lot of steel and coal and things like that. And so I think it's still...
self-reliance building? Like other countries are producing more or are they...
Yeah. Production is moving a little bit out of China, but not home producing. Some people say, let's produce everything ourselves in our own countries. Yeah, for me in Sweden, I have a hard time believing that we can grow wine.
Yeah, lots of people are not going to be happy with that, right?
No.
Yeah. No, you're right. So what? So we're going to have maybe like niches, like China develops a niche that, you know, the wine producing countries have their niche. I was watching something about this New Zealand honey that sells for 100 times more. They have their niche. Yeah. Mm. Is it like that?
Yeah, but still, I mean, 90% of what you have around you has been on a keel at one point. I mean, I don't know what you see when you look around, but maybe your desk was not made in the US or your boat maybe was not. So it's all, we are in a global business. It's just a matter of, I think, collaborating to meet these challenges that we have.
So at one point we talked about, obviously it sounds like there's a mindset shift, but what are some of the more significant challenges that are happening within shipping? You know, from what you've said thus far, it sounds like there's a lot of small shipping companies that just don't have the ability to make great leaps and just build new ships that are energy efficient. What happens to the old fleet? Like, you know, what challenges have you seen?
Well, there are companies who are rebuilding the old ships because then you can deliver that. But it all boils down to what regulations there are. I live in a part of the world where we had regulations about sulfur. 1st of January 2015, I think we had that in this area. Because the politicians realized we cannot have ships polluting where there are a lot of people living because we have to breathe that air. So they decided that there should be less sulfur in what the ship was polluting. And then all the ship owners in this part of the world, that is the sick area, was from half of Norway to the British Channel to the Baltic Sea. So it's a huge land, I would say. But then all the ship owners and the ports and everyone said, well, this cannot happen. We cannot, you know, how will that happen? And then they started to realize, well, maybe we will be the first ones in the world to do this. So they started testing out LNG as a fuel, and they started to think about how can we then bunker the fuel LNG. And then they had to rethink everything they did, but then they became forerunners. They were supported by the EU, for instance. And EU also helped by putting up the infrastructure or helping countries and cities to put up the infrastructure. Because if you change the fuel, you need to have the fuel somewhere so you can go there and bunker it. And all of a sudden, they became forerunners for the rest of the world, and they still are. People are asking them about the LNG, what is that, and how do you do that? And the engine manufacturers, they were also forerunners at that time because the market was looking for LNG engines instead of the diesel engines or the old, really bad ones. So I think it boils down to regulations. That is hard when it comes to global business. It's all the countries of the world that must agree on something. And that is hard.
Yeah. Because if one country is just more restrictive, the people just go somewhere else, right?
Yeah. But also, I mean, if you're sitting around the table, like in the IMO, International Maritime Organization, that is a UN body in London. Every country that is represented there, they need to find what they can agree on. Some countries want more and some want less, but they have to find the middle way to agree on something. And that is then the policy that everyone should live up to. On the other hand, you are allowed to be better than the regulations. It's not forbidden to be better, but then it's the bottom line. You can't go below that.
Mm. And you've also been doing a lot of insurance. How over the years have you, like, especially with so much talk about global warming and everything increasing over the last 20, 30 years, how have like insurance premiums and stuff like that, have they started absorbing it? Have they started getting super expensive now just because the oceans are crazier than ever? Is that true?
It was 20 years since I left the insurance industry. Yeah. I got out. Okay.
Before this craziness happened, yeah?
Yeah, before that. On the other hand, it must have an impact, but because the more technical things you put on a ship that you want to insure, the insurer wants to know what risk are they then carrying? Are there extra equipment if something happens? Or what happens if an LNG engine blows up? Is that worse than a diesel engine? I mean, so there's so many things to consider as an insurer. And also, how big is the ship? Where can it go to be repaired? I mean, you need to know that as well. And spare parts, where do you get that from?
There's obviously a ton of talk in all the different avenues of kind of renewable fuels. Everything from hydrogen to electric to wind to actual wind shipping vessels.
Those are last guess.
Yeah. What seems to be like the most viable right now? Because it seems like everyone is kind of just shooting off into all these different directions and there is no real clear winner of any of them.
No, you're correct. No, but I think that's a change of a mindset, because in the old days it was one ship. I mean, if you go and buy a ship, you usually don't buy one ship, but you maybe order 5 or 10. But then you build the first ship and then you realize, oh, maybe I should change that. And then you change a little bit. So no ship is alike from the rest. So they are all different. It's not like buying 5 or 10 lorries, because then you could just choose a different color and they're all the same. That's the standard thing. But you need to come with your drawings to tell the shipyard, this is what I want. So it's totally different. In the old days, there was a ship. It was in steel. It was a certain, centimeters or whatever you call it in steel.
Thickness,
and it was more like a one size fits all. But nowadays, I think ship owners are more starting to think, what trade am I going to? Because there is a difference if you're trading between two cities, you can see the shore from where you're standing. Then you can have electrical power. But it's not the same to have electrical power if you're trading over the Atlantic. That would be a little bit different. And it's also got to do with where can you bunker your fuel? Even if you, let's say you are in the Baltic Sea. I don't think there is any LNG bunker. Yeah, you can bunker that north of Stockholm. But I mean, you need to know, if that is the trade, where can I bunker and what can I bunker? So then you need to know, when you are planning for your ship, you need to plan for the trade it's going to go. And also, where are you going to own your money? Owe your money on that ship. So what kind of ship is it? Is it a roll-on, roll-off, or is it passenger ship? Is it a cruise ship? And the cruise ship, that is closer to the consumer. So they have a bigger demand than the one maybe carrying some other goods than passengers. It's different. So I would say, yes, you're correct, Meryl. It's different. It's all of the things. The forerunners are there. They're trying it out, every one of them.
Nice. So we can expect great things, yeah, in the near future.
Woo!
The optimist Lena speaks.
Yeah, but I speak to so many people who tells me this. So it has to be true.
A lot of them are actively working on some of these angles, right?
Yeah. I did also an interview with Ocean Bird. That is, if you have heard about the wind that they are going to use again now for ships. You need to look up.
It's coming back. Yeah.
Oceanbird.com.
We just interviewed Eco Clipper last time.
It's the same, probably. So that is Valenius from Sweden and Alfa Laval from Sweden. They have a joint venture doing this. So interesting. Hydrofoil ships. I have interviewed a guy from Candela. They are doing hydrofoil. So interesting. Smaller ships, but then again, doing passenger ships instead of the old steamships that is still used in the Stockholm archipelago.
Well, considering that we have you here, we might as well ask you on the service side of, you know, when it comes to like recreational boats, for instance, and even the super yacht industry, there's issues of getting people in to actually build the boats / service and maintain them. What's that look like on the shipping side of the industry? Are there issues with getting people in, to work on ships?
Crews?
The honest answer is, I don't know. But I think it's large companies that is doing these services on these large ships. So it's a little bit different, I think. You need to be sort of recruiting people and making sure that you can deliver to your customers. I think you should listen to my interview with Helene Melkvist. She's from Volvo Penta. It's a great interview. And she's really talking about the yachting and a little bit smaller industry. She used to be a ship owner in the big shipping industry before, and now she's back at the Volvo and doing Volvo Penta. Really interesting.
Well, I think what Meryl's alluding to is like even like these big established companies like Volvo, Penta, and stuff. They'll like Yamaha just came up with like a brand new electric engine. They're gonna put it into boats. Okay, in fact, I think they've got like a deal with boatyards where boatyards can only put that engine in new boats. They can't go into like old boats. So they're gonna take that. So it's gonna sort of phase out in the public slowly. And then the funny bit is lots of people, the service side, like Meryl is saying, don't know anything about it when it comes out. They're just going to be like, oh, this is new, yeah. And so I think that even the Volvo Pentas of the world have like a sort of almost a responsibility to like train the people, you know, downstream, so that even if these new moves that we're making, you know, hopefully they're successful. Let's see what happens, right? But yeah, that'd be exciting to check out. So, Lena, on the way out, though, could you give us, because again, you've got, and maybe we'll tackle them separately, but like give us like, hopefully there's a whole new wave of podcasters coming around, okay? So maybe like the top three tips for somebody looking to get into podcasting and, you know, make a solid career out of it, make his millions, her millions. Yeah, what can you give them?
I would listen to someone who could tell me that.
Yeah.
No, but to be a podcaster, you need to be patient because it takes so much longer than you think. And then you need to know, you need to have a business plan of your own. You need to really know your why. Why am I doing this? And it takes a while to get that straight for yourself. Why am I doing this? Because when you know why, then you know who your audience will be, sort of, who are you talking to? Yeah, you need a lot of time on your hands. but I would say, yeah, I am a Libsyn-hosted podcast. And Libsyn is really, really good. They have been around for a long while. They have a YouTube channel. You can learn a lot how to do different things. And I think they are a good hosting company because I upload my podcast and I choose which channels I want it to be in. And then the system does it all for me. I don't have to do a lot of, you know, chasing around doing this. Oh, I have to put it on Spotify. Oh, I have to put it on Amazon. I have to put it on everywhere. And then I think the next advice would be listen to some podcasts and take notes of what you like and what you don't like. And then do what you have put on your list that you like.
Well, I'm not done with my shipping questions. So
more shipping questions.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is one of the more common misconceptions you've heard about shipping through your time doing this?
Well, the problem is that I don't hear anything because no one knows about us. I call this industry the Cinderella industry. No one knows about us, but the Cinderella, we do everything, you know, the fairy tale Cinderella. She does everything in the kitchen and she's cleaning and she's doing everything. And then she's invited to the ball. but we are in the background. It's like I also work with an association working with broadband. You need broadband, otherwise you can't get the connectivity and you can't have all these self-driving cars and you can't have anything, but you need the broadband. People don't know about that either. Unless it doesn't work, then they become like when a ship is stuck in the Suez Canal and nothing works. Then people understand it. But as long as it works, no one knows about it. So I would say the worst part is that no one knows about it. And that is what I need, why I needed to start my podcast. And my soapbox is I've been asking each and every one of my guests, how can we become more visible? How can we be more known to the general public? I have 220 episodes now. Maybe I've had five good answers. The people paid to spread the word about shipping and they don't know how to do it. And that makes me sad because it's not that hard. You know that.
Yeah, you know, we've seen some crazy ways of trying to create awareness. Like one time there was this presentation that this group gave and they're like, yeah, we're getting our name out to the general public by putting ads in Trade Only magazine. And I'm like people in the industry read that. It's not people outside of the industry. But getting into another question here, how do you think diversity and inclusion are shaping the shipping industry? Is it becoming more of a trend? I know that you said that you we're doing 50-50 on your podcast. How have you seen, you know, inclusion and diversity play out?
I have seen some forerunners in that part as well, signing a pledge to become diverse and inclusive. And I've also seen the work, and I have also been part of it, to show the women in this industry. And I think maybe the C-level people or the board people have realized, okay, so maybe we need to have the best people on board, not just the men. So that's, I think, cool. It is. And I spoke yesterday with one woman who is the chief operating officer at Cargill, which is a very big trading company and ship owning company. And she said, the young generation, they don't want to work in your workplace unless you have a diverse and inclusion policy in place, and that you're working, not just talking about it. You need to show them it's okay to be anyone in our company.
And as you've mentioned earlier, there's a lot of different growth and movements within the marine industry, whether it be new forms of power or technology. But, you know, what are some of the bigger opportunities for growth within the shipping industry? If you were some person looking in, like, hey, I want to get in, what is like untapped?
I can't tell you. Then I would be investing in it. No, but I mean, still, we're still behind when it comes to connectivity. That is changing because the satellite companies are, it's getting cheaper in a way to be connected, and you get all the machine to machine and you get all of that. So as a bonus, also the crew gets connected to home. I mean, that is what we all need. We all want a good working place. And what I was starting to say about the pandemic, I think it has put some light on what it's like to be at sea working, and being away from home and being away from your family and things like that. So more emphasis on the seafarers and their working place, I think. So all the digital tools is coming in now from also to help the seafarers and also to help ship owners. But then again, I'm thinking the other way around. I'm thinking, what shall we ship when all this fuel is, you know, we use oil for so many things.
It's spent, yeah.
and I would say 60% of everything that is shipped at sea is some kind of energy. So it's oil and gasoline and coal and gas and all of that. So I'm thinking about that instead.
And kind of as our one of our final questions here, what in the next 10 to 20 years, what do you see the shipping industry? Will we ever see in 10 to 20 years the first hydrogen shipping vessel to cross the ocean? Like, what is possible?
Unmanned.
Yeah. What is possible?
If I was a seafarer, I would be happy to have an unmanned ship over the Atlantic, right? Because then I wouldn't have to be on board. Right. I'd be seasick. Hydrogen, yeah, that is, I don't know. Some people say that that is waste to use hydrogen. I wouldn't stand for that because I'm not a technical person. But I think we are about to come to zero emission. Yeah, I think, I believe in that. People are working so hard to get that. And I mean, if you have the wind, yeah, it's going to be combined with something else as a fuel. It could be a biofuel. Could be methanol made from bio, and then you have the wind sails as well when the wind comes. So there are so different, I think there are combinations that as people have never before thought about. Oh, maybe I could do it in another way. We're so stuck in our own heads and stuck in our own culture, but it's opening up now. And I think that the young people and the women are actually helping out to get this industry up and running again.
Yeah, I bet. Because, you know, the funny thing is, this is like shipping is one of the oldest professions in the world, I guess. Right.
Yeah.
And you're right, is that maybe it's just sort of become stagnant because it's just old men doing the same thing over and over again. Yeah. And now these young minds, women are coming in and I'm like, wait, let's, maybe we could do this way. Yeah. Like, maybe we can smash these two things together.
From the beginning, I would think that if there was a crew on board a ship and one of the people, usually the captain, went ashore and started his own shipping company. Then he decided he wanted to employ the people that he had been working with, because then he was still at the top. He was the captain. And that is how it worked. Also, they had family members come in. But then you don't get any external input into it. I would say 20 years ago, something, 20, yeah, I saw the first employed CEO, which didn't have any shipping background or sailing background. So it's a different way of looking at it. It's more becoming a more like every other business in a way, which is good. But still, we think it's the best business there is.
Lots of fun all the time. Awesome. So Lena, any final thoughts you want to leave our listeners with? Anything to think about?
I think they should get to know more about the maritime industry because it's such a cool industry and we are actually the backbone of global trade. Everything you see, more or less, has been on a keel sometime before you have it in your home. So go and listen to the Shipping Podcast.
Ooh, yeah. Where can people check you out?
Well, shippingpodcast.com or on all different podcasting platforms there is. Shipping Podcast.
Awesome, Lena. Simple. Well, it was great talking to you.
Yeah, I had a great time. It wasn't that hard to be a guest. I can tell my guests now. It's not hard at all. You just keep talking.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Check back every Tuesday for our latest episode. And be sure to like, share, and subscribe to ShipShape.pro.